All right, welcome to Computer Science 50, walkthrough 2. I'll be covering problem set 2 today. How many of you have taken a look at problem set 2? So, all of you, that's great. Okay, so this problem set 2 contains three sections. The old man song, Caesar cipher encryptor, and the visionaire cipher encryptor. Okay, so what is the old man song? Can anyone tell me what the problem set entails? Yep.
Basically, you print out the lyrics of the old man song, which is just like a chorus that changes two words.
Yeah, exactly. So the old man song is the objective is to print out a song whose lyrics repeat after following a certain rule. And the Caesar cipher is, of course, one of the ciphers that we discussed in lecture, and we'll be creating a program that encrypts a certain word using the Caesar cipher with a certain offset. And the visionaire cipher is also similar to the Caesar cipher in that it shifts characters along to encrypt them, but we also need to provide a key to encrypt the source text with the visionaire cipher. Okay. So I'm just going to go over what each of these sections are going to entail. The old man's song requires repetition. So what is the naive approach in approaching the old man's song problem? What is the most basic thing you can do to solve this problem?
Write them out.
Yeah, write them out. So you could include the entire song in your program, and it would work, right? If you had a bunch of printf statements and each of the lines in the song, you could do that. But that's very bad design, because we're wasting code, we're wasting all this data that we're including in our program, where we could take out the small parts that change in the song and put them in a different area of the program, maybe in an array or in an if statement or whatever you might want. So there's going to be a lot of design decisions in the old man song, and that's also a theme that's repeated throughout this problem set. The Caesar cipher encryptor and the visionaire cipher encryptor also require some design decisions, because if you don't follow these, follow good design, you might end up with big, bulky code that won't get you very good grades in the course. And the Caesar cipher encryptor requires a command line argument. What is a command line argument? Can anyone tell me what a command line argument is? Yeah?
So you write like in the command line. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's what you write after Caesar, Caesar being the program name, and it's basically what you want to tell the program. Like in math, you might have a function f called f, which takes x, y, and z. So x, y, and z are the arguments to the function f. So the programs take arguments like that as well, and we'll be seeing how we can do that with the argc and argv variables that are defined in main. And arrays. So we covered arrays last time, and we covered arrays today in this lecture. In today's lecture, what is an array? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so an array is an array of things, right? It's basically pieces of data that are situated contiguously alongside each other. So it's basically like a shopping list. A shopping list might be an array. If you might start off with the item 0, it could be bananas, item 1, peaches, or something like that. That's an array. And the visionaire cipher also requires arrays, but it's going to require arrays of arrays. And we're going to use that by looking through each of the characters in our ciphertext. So we'll see that in when we go over that later on. Okay, so yeah, a couple of you last time asked me to discuss the Hacker Edition also, and while the main objective of the walkthroughs is not to cover the Hacker Edition, I'm just going to go over a few of the some hints for the Hacker Edition. The Hacker Edition involves cracking a weak DES data encryption standard password, and it's weak because we have the result of the password, and for any password, you can use a brute force approach, and a brute force approach is trying all possible permutations of a password. But we can also do better attacks using dictionary attacks, which is going through an entire dictionary of words. That's why you can't have passwords like test or password. These are really bad passwords because they're in the dictionary. And anyone with a good dictionary on your system can go through the entire list of dictionary words, or pairs of dictionary words, or three dictionary words together, and crack your password. So that's one of the attacks that you can use for the Hacker Edition. You can also use alterations of dictionary words. This is very important. So for example, if you have a dictionary word, say, I don't know, apple, you might, you know, change the E to something else, which might be a good way to make a password, which also means it's a good way to crack a password. And the brute force approach, as I explained, is trying all possible permutations. But there are bad ways to doing brute force and good ways to doing brute force, because you might not want, for example, what kind of user is going to have a password saying 00000? Because that's one of the permutations that you're going to encounter earlier on in your search if you use brute force. So there are ways to prioritize brute force in a way that makes your password crack easily and quicker. OK, so enough of that. I'm going to go over to the standard edition again. OK, so the Old Man's Song. As we discussed, it's a song that has several verses. And some of the words change. So I've highlighted the parts that change. So in both verses, we see he played one, he played two. So we're seeing the numbers change. But can we simply increment these numbers? Can we say have an counter I and increment that? No, okay. No, because these are words, of course, and C doesn't understand English words. So what can we do? How can we generate these English word numbers? Mm-hmm. Associate letters with numbers. So could you elaborate? Okay. So I think you mean an array. So if we associate some numbers with the English words, that might be a good way to do it.
With words or with letters?
So which one do you think? With words or letters?
For this, I guess words would work, but... Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so you mean increment each of the letters in the alphabet, go through A, B, C. Okay, so that's an approach. But it's also the same as incrementing from 0 to 1, 0 to 10. Because if you recall, characters in C are stored as numbers from 0 to 255. So if in your approach, you're just incrementing numbers in a sense. Okay, so that's good. And we've also got this on my thumb and on my shoe part in the second line. So we're going to have to store those as well. So what's the best, so you said, you mentioned an indexed data type. So an array might be a good way to store this. So how can we, how do we specify an array in C? Can anyone tell me how we can define an array? Let's call the array numbers. Then
brackets.
Yep. Yeah. What kind of brackets?
Ooh. Square ones.
Yeah. Mhm. And then we want to specify some things that we want in our numbers. Okay, so what is, pardon?
Do we need to put a number in the brackets?
So do we need to put a number in the brackets? The answer, since we're going to specify each of the elements in our code already, we don't actually need to specify numbers. Because we know that we have numbers from 1 to 10. We have 10 elements. So we don't need to specify that because we're going to write that down here. Okay, so what are each of these numbers? What data type are each of these numbers? String, yeah. So we can write string numbers. So if you recall, this means an array of strings. So So it's a bit of an arcane syntax because the part that we're referring to is far away, but this means array of string called numbers. Okay? So how can we create an array that has 10 elements, which are 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 in English words? What kind of characters do we have here? Does anyone remember? Okay, so we're going to use the curly brace. Does anyone remember this in lecture? Was this covered in lecture? No? I think it was, but I'm not sure, so I won't say. But anyway, if we want to specify an array, we can write 1, 2, 3. So this is basically an array of three elements, saying 1, 2, and 3. These are three strings in one array. Does anyone have any problems with this? Is it OK? Does this look good? OK. So once we've got this numbers array, we need another array for, say, on my thumb, on my shoe, on my knee, on my door, on my hive, on my sticks, etc. So we need two arrays that's going to store each of these words, these phrases, so that we can go over each of the verses in the song to generate the lyrics. So does everyone have an idea of how we could generate this song? It's pretty simple, right? Once we've got the data structure and stored all the data. Do we use cases? So how would you use cases?
I'm not entirely sure, but in class, if there's an example of case one, and then
yeah.
It has something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, we could use cases. For example, if we had an integer I, and then we kept on incrementing that from 0 to 9, because we're going from 1 to 10. We could go from 1 to 10. And then our case statement would say, if case 1, then write 1. Get the zeroth element from the numbers array, and get the zeroth element from the phrases array, let's say, the second line. Yeah, that would work. But we actually don't need to write a case statement in this case, because a case statement actually takes up quite a bit of memory when we convert it into machine code. So we could simply use because we're using these arrays indexed by numbers, we could just increment the number I and then plug the number I into numbers, right? Numbers I, and then we could get the appropriate phrase for that verse. Does everyone get it? Do you get it? Yeah? Okay, so what I mean is that we have a loop. So for example, for, I'm not going to write it out, but for I equals 0, I smaller than or equal to 9, I plus plus. And then in this for loop, we're going to print out each of the lines in the verse, lines of the song, right? So when it comes time to print out, say, 1, we can say printf numbers. Oh, no, printf percent s. Numbers I. So I'm not actually supposed to be writing the code in this walkthrough, but I've written it anyway. Does that make sense? Does that make sense now? Good? Okay. All right. Let's get on to Caesar. But before that, let's cover design decisions and style, because that's an important part of CS50 and part of your grade when it comes to grading PS1. Does anyone have any questions about this? Can I go on? Yes?
Sorry, it might be too bad because I missed the beginning part, but it's like the parts that aren't folded are like the main part, but then you use the for loop to insert things into it.
Oh, so the bold parts are the parts that change in every verse, but in this for loop, of course, I'm going to have other things like this old man he played.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the arrays contain the necessary portions of the code that we want, the phrase that we want to insert. Okay? Great. Any more questions about old man? Yes?
So if you put numbers bracket 0, it mm-hmm. print one number track and one would print two.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so. Sorry, this isn't working very well. Okay, so design and style. You might recall from reading the problem set spec that we encourage and expect you to follow good design and style in this problem set onwards. So what is good design and what is good style? Good design, so these are the questions that David wrote in the problem set spec. Is my code straightforward to read? So this is pretty simple. If your code is going all over the place, your variables are called X, Y, and Z instead of easier to remember variables like numbers and phrases. If it looks like math, then it might not be straightforward to read. There's also, am I wasting CPU cycles unnecessarily? For example, if you're going over a for loop twice, where you could just go, do it with one for loop, then you're wasting CPU cycles because you don't actually need to go over that loop, and going over loops is expensive. Okay. And is my code more complicated than it need be? So this encompasses both of those two questions, the first two questions. But if your code is going all over the place and it looks like spaghetti, then your code might be more complicated than it need be. Okay? Does anyone have any questions about this slide? Because I want to go on. Do you have a question? Okay. Okay, and what is good style? Style is different from design because design is what your program actually does, but style is how your program is written, how it will look when it's printed out on the printer. So what is good style? The questions that David posed are, is my code well commented? So this is very important because in CS50, you might be writing and reading your own code, but you also have to realize that your TFs are also reading your code. When you program for a commercial product, not only are you writing your own code, but other people are also writing your code. They're reading your code, they're changing it, they're fixing it. So code is not for you. Code is for everyone. So code has to be well commented, because if you have a very complicated statement in your code, then if you don't have comments, then another programmer might not be able to understand what you're doing, or he or she might think that you're doing something else when you're actually doing another thing. Does that make sense? Okay. So is my code pretty printed? What does this mean? Is there consistent indentation? So I'll explain this in the next slide. But if you're, for example, if you hit tab, in your text editor, in Vim, Nano, Emacs, if you have tabbed that looks like four spaces in one area, and you have another line of code that looks like it has five spaces, then that's not consistent indentation, because your indentation is. So this applies to essays as well, because if you have one paragraph that has four spaces at the beginning and one that has five spaces at the beginning, then that's not consistent indentation. It's the same thing with C code and any other kind of programming language. Okay. And lines no longer than 80 characters. This is more of an arcane thing because text editors and terminal windows are usually fixed at some size because there's no there's limited screen real estate. So if generally in CS50, we recommend and require that code be no longer than 80 characters wide. Okay, so if you have a line of code that's really long, for example, if you're printing out a really long string, then you might need to cut it up into two lines. Okay, so that means when it's printed out for your TF, if your TF prints out code, it's not going to be cut off and it's not going to wrap unnecessarily. Okay? Any questions? Okay. So this is what I think is a good example, an example of good style. So this is a function that, so what is this function? What does it do? Can anyone tell me? I mean, it's written up there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So it was really easy for you to see. I mean, you probably could have told. I mean, of course, you could have told from just reading the code. But you could tell what the function.
I didn't see that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you could tell what the function does because it's written up in the comment at the top. So this is it's an example of writing what a function does, a function descriptor at the top of your function. And I've used multi-line comments there with the forward slash asterisk. ending with an asterisk forward slash. So this block of code is all a comment. The compiler couldn't care less what you wrote there. So it says what the function does, number one. Number two, it says what it takes, any arguments it takes, and number three, what it returns. So this is a kind of template for any function descriptions that you might write. I mean, of course, there are other styles that you can use. And this is just my own style. Yes?
This is just an example, right? We're not really expected to comment on what the program should do because we're being told what it should do.
Right. So you're told what the program should do in the problem set spec, but you should sort of make sure that your program makes sense just reading it.
But we should comment on, say, greet user string name or on return 42 as if you understand what those things mean, but not actually comment on what the program does because
right.
Right,
you can assume the TF knows what the program does, but I think it's generally a good idea to write what your program does, even if you think that anyone reading your code knows what it does, because your code might be distributed elsewhere, or the possibilities are infinite for code. So even in CS50, I think it's a good idea to write what your code does. Just a general sentence. You don't need to write paragraphs and paragraphs in your comments. Oh, so that's also one very important point. If you're writing too many comments and too much in your comments, then you might be going overboard, and you also need to avoid that. Okay, so this function, I didn't actually write any comments in the code itself because it's pretty simple, but maybe I should have. For example, before the str comp line, this compares two strings and checks if they're equal. But maybe I should have written a one-line comment up there saying, is name David, or something like that. It just needs to be really simple. It doesn't need to be very complicated. Okay, any questions about this? Okay. So, what is the next slide? Okay, so we're onto the Caesar cipher encryptor, which is the second part of the problem set. So, does everyone remember what the Caesar cipher does exactly? Can anyone tell me what the Caesar cipher does? For example, let's say we had the text ABCDF, and then we had the value of K of, this is 2, 3. What does a Caesar cipher do? Yeah, so a Caesar cipher takes some input, P in this case, and then shifts it by K spaces to the right. So generates an output C. So that's what the lineup up there, CI equals PI plus K mod 26 is doing. Why mod 26? Why can't we just shift? Yep.
Because if we get to the end of the alphabet, mm-hmm. It could just stop if you didn't have the mod 26.
Yeah. So we need mod 26 because for example, if we shifted z one space, then what are we going to do? Are we going to go to a symbol or are we going to go to A? In the spec and in most Caesar ciphers, you're supposed to go to A again. So by modding by 26, you make sure that if you go to, say, 27, then that wraps around to 1 because 27 mod 26, 27 divided by 26 is 1 remainder 1. So we go to the beginning of the alphabet again. Does that make sense? Everyone know what the Caesar cipher is? Because this is very important when you implement some code. You need to know what the code is doing. OK, so let's actually try and implement this. Of course, again, I'm sorry, we can't write the code in walkthrough, but we can go over the pseudocode. So what does our program need to do first? This is so if you recall, our Caesar program is going to take one argument, and that argument is, what is the command line argument that Caesar takes? Yeah, it's the value of K. So it's the value by which, how many spaces do we have to shift? That didn't make sense, but how many spaces do we have to shift? That is the answer, and that is K. So we're going to invoke our program. If it's called Caesar, then we can say Caesar 5, for example, to shift by 5 spaces. And that's how our program is going to be invoked. And what other input do we need? It's not a command line argument, but what other argument do we need?
String.
Mm-hmm. The string to encrypt. So we're going to get that using which function? Pardon? Mm-hmm. Get what function? Get string. Yeah, we're going to get a string, so we have to use the get string function to read a string in from the user. Okay. So how can we do this? So I said we use the get string function. So this is the same as last time, except we're reading strings now. So I'll just write out string, say input equals get string. And that will just prompt the user for a string, and then put that value into input. This is from the CS50 library, so of course we have to remember the sharp, the hash include CS50.h, and the lcs50 command line argument for GCC. Yes.
So getString doesn't actually exist in the standard library; it only exists in the CS50 library.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, getString only exists in the CS50 library because the concept of strings itself doesn't exist in C. We're creating. So we've covered arrays now. What the string type actually does is it's just an alias to a char star. It's a string of characters. So if in C++ there are strings, but not in C. Yeah.
So input, it will be an array that has our string inside of it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How could you say like an input like brackets and then a certain number and it'll give you that position or no? Like you have to like convert it into something else?
It will. If you say input 0 and our input was, say, hello, then input 0 will return H. That's because input is actually, as I said, a string is actually a char star. So it's an array of chars. So it's basically H-E-L-L-O in an array. Okay? That's a good question. Any more questions about what we're doing? Okay, so once we've got the input, we've got the command line argument. Okay, how do we get the command line argument first? What was the variable that we read to get the command line argument? How do we know what the user typed in before the program even started? How does C let us read in the user's input? Pardon? Yes, so we're reading in the value of k, but that came in through a command line argument, and we really need to read in the command line argument. Yes?
There's an argc command?
Yeah, there's argc. So what is argc? There's argc and argv. What is the difference between, do you know what the difference between argc and argv is? Anyone? Yeah.
Isn't argv the argument value?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct. argv is the value of each of the command line arguments, and argc is the count. It's how many command line arguments were supplied. So, and one important thing that we need to remember about argv and argc is that argv0 is always the file name of the program that was invoked. So in this case, it would be, for example, NFS, home, UC, Uchiyama, CS50, Caesar. That the file name would be argv0. Okay, so if we need to read in, say, this value, 5, then we need to write argv1. So the array sort of starts from 1, which is counterintuitive to other C arrays. Do you not get it? Yeah?
Sorry. What is the command line? Is that the main function?
Oh, so the command line is what we type to get the program running. So in this case, we typed in Caesar 5.
And then 5 indicates K.
Yeah. Right, so if you, if in any C program we've seen, we had a main function that was declared like this, int argc char star argv. Okay, so this was the main function, and so inside the main function, we can always refer to argc and argv, because these are provided by C for us, and they're always initialized to the correct values. Okay. Okay, good question. So once we've got those inputs, does everyone understand how we could get 5 now? argv1. Yep.
Where would you type that?
So do you mean in the code or? Mm-hmm. So if we wanted the value 5 in argv1, we type Caesar 5 when we run the program. Okay. Okay. Yes?
Why is it 1?
Oh, it's 1 because 0 is the file name of the program that's currently executed by the specifications. And argv1 is the first argument. Yeah, that's a good question. Any more? Okay. Oh, it wouldn't be argvk because argv is just a very very standardized sort of array for any command line argument. So, for example, can you see this? If we had a program called test, and we invoked it with the arguments hello world app, then in test in our program test in test.c. In the main function, we would have an array argv which would contain hello as the first element, the 1th element, world as the 2th element, and app as the 3th element. I'm saying that because it's not the 0th element. So argv1, what would argv1 be? Pardon? It would be hello, yeah. argv1 is hello, and world is 2. 2 is, argv2 is world, and argv3 is app. Okay, got it?
So 0 is test?
Yeah, 0 would be test. Or it would be the file name that we use to invoke it. Okay, any more questions about this? This is very important, because we're going to use this in the other sections of the problem set and in future problem sets. Okay, so stop me if you have any more questions. So the Caesar program, once we've got the input, so we got 5, the value of k, as a string, because argv is it's an array of chars. It's an array of an array of chars. So basically it's an array of strings. Okay, char star array. It's an array of char stars. So we could actually write this as char star star. This is actually identical syntax, but we'll cover this star star thing in later lectures. So what this is saying is that it's an array of chars. So it's a two-dimensional array. It's like a matrix. Okay, so we've got the input as a string. 5 is not a number, it's a string. So how do we convert that into an integer or a number? We can't actually cast it because 5 is not 5 in ASCII. It's some big number. So close, but how can you convert? No, we can't. Unfortunately, in C, we can't say an int I equals the string 5 because that would cause the compiler to complain that your type is wrong, that you've mistyped. But what you can do is use some functions in the C standard library that convert from string to integer. So what is one of these functions that we can use? Okay, so the most simple, the simplest function that we can use is atoi, a2i. A being the alphabetical, any alphabetical input, and I being an integer, a2i. So we would use a2i, for example, like this. Int k equals a2i arg v 1. So if we provided Caesar 5, then that would create an integer 5 in k. Can everyone see the board over here? Good. It says int k equals a2i in brackets argv1. So that's all very good, and it works if we type in Caesar 5. But when does it not work?
When you just write Caesar?
Mm-hmm. If we just write Caesar, then that wouldn't work, and then maybe we'd get some horrendous error from the operating system. Maybe we'd crash. So what is important first? Before reading in...
See that argv1 is a number greater than 0.
Right, so we need to check that argv1 is actually a number bigger than 0. So we also need to check that we can actually read in the value of argv1, because argv is an array, and if we start reading in parts of the array that don't actually exist, then the operating system might actually kick us off the system. So what we need to do is use not argv, but before that, use argc. Yeah. So argc is the count variable. So in this case, if we typed in Caesar 5, what would argc be? Yeah, that's close, but it's not actually 1. Because recall that there are actually two things in our array. It would actually be 2, because Caesar counts as 1 argument as well. I know it's strange, but it's what the operating system does. So Caesar is argv0 and 5 is argv1, so therefore we have 2 elements in our array, so argc is 2. So before we read in the value of argv1, we need to check that argc is actually 2. So that we need to check that Caesar, Caesar some string was provided and not just Caesar or Caesar 5, 2, because that would be invalid. A 5 space 2, that would be two extra arguments. And so argc would be 3. Do you get it? Good. Okay, so when we've done that argc check, we've read in the number into k. What's another problem? So you mentioned that argv1 has to be a number greater than 0, an integer greater than 0. But the thing is, a2i is actually not a very sophisticated function. It actually returns 0 whenever you specify something invalid to it. So for example, if you typed in Caesar hello, which is clearly invalid in our program, the value of k would be 0. And that's a problem, right? Because you can't tell whether an error occurred, as the spec requires. You can't tell if the user actually typed in 0, if the user actually doesn't want to encrypt, but ran your program anyway, which, you know, might be an error in itself. Does everyone get it? Let's just use a for loop to go over each of the characters, manually checking to see if our input was actually a number. I'll just write up what Ken meant. What Ken said was, how do we get the length of a string? What is the function that gets us the length of a string?
String.
Yeah, strlen. So we can say len int len equals argv1. This is, of course, after we checked argc. Okay? And then len i++. Okay, so this is Ken's loop. We're checking to see if argv1 was actually a number or not, whether it contains stray characters or not. Does everyone know what the for loop is going to do? How is it going to check to see if each of the characters in the string was a number and not a different character, like A or C? Pardon? Yeah, sorry. So the for loop, how are we going to check to see if our number was, for example, 5 and not 5h or h2? These are invalid inputs, right? But this is a valid input. How are we going to check that it's not this? Recall that this is a string, so we can go over each of the characters in the string.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so exactly. We can go through each of the characters in our string and check to see if it's the correct ASCII value. So what would be how would we check to see if it's the correct ASCII value here? What are the correct ASCII values in this case?
Can you just put like one in single quotes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we can put So zero is also valid. So we need to check to see if the value of the value of what is between 0 and 9? What is the character that we're working on right now? How do K? So the entire thing is K in the end, but we're working on argv1 right now. Do you get it? We're checking, we're currently validating the input that the user provided. So what would be the appropriate way to check each of the characters? How do we get at this current character?
Argv I.
Mm-hmm, argv I. Argv I, because remember, argv is the list of arguments. It's nearly correct. What do we need instead of I here? So the entire string is called argv1. And we're going over argv1. So think of argv1 as a string, say foo. Yeah, so we do argv1i. Does everyone get that? It's not complicated at all. It's just argv1 is a name of a string. And argv1i is the current character we're working on. So if we cause this for loop to go over 5h, then in the when I is 0, the current character argv1i will be 5, and argv12 will be argv11 will be h, argv10 will be 5, and argv11 will be h. Does everyone get that? Okay. So now we want to check if argv1i is between 0 and 9. We need to check to see if it's between 0 and 9, that is single quotes, because this will be automatically converted to the ASCII value of the digit 0. I don't know what it is, so I'll rely on the C compiler to do it for me. And the same for 9 as well. So how can we do this? What kind of check do we need here in this for loop? Pardon? If, yeah. Yeah, we can use an if statement. If argv1i is greater than or equal to 0, and if argv1i is smaller than or equal to 9. Yeah? Everyone good? That makes sense? Okay, so now this, so that's, is that what you had in mind? That's good? Okay, so thanks. This would check for our input. And now we need to actually do our Caesar cipher. But we'll take a short, a quick 5-minute tape changing break, and we'll be back here in 5 minutes. All right, thanks. Okay, so how was your break? so this is A to I that I covered over, that I covered earlier on. A to I, what that does is it converts a string to an integer. So when in doubt about any C function, just Google it. And you'll see this website called c++.com, and you'll see that A to I takes a constant char star called a string. So a char star is a string, right? It's a string of characters, and it's called str. And, well, we don't need to worry about the name. But A to I basically takes a string and then returns an integer. Okay? So the problem with A to I, as I described earlier on, is that it returns 0 when any non-numeric number was character was found in the string. So what we need to do is to take this approach to look through each of the digits and then check for its validity and then do A to I on it. Okay? Does that make sense? So there are two steps involved. First, we check to see if each of the characters in our input was a number. And then we run A to I on it and then convert it into an integer. Okay? Any questions? Okay. So now that we've got the input validated, what do we need to do? This is the main part of the Caesar cipher. This is very important. Oh, right. Okay, so remember that the Caesar cipher shifts each character by a certain k, and the k we got by running the input validation, and then k equals a to i, argv 1. Okay? So now we've got all the ingredients that are necessary for our Caesar cipher. So how do we do this? Can anyone start me off? No?
Take each character of the string and then add the k, which will already be a constant, and then print that.
Yeah, exactly. So we take each of the input, p. We go through it in the same way that we went over each of the elements of argv 1 using this for loop, using for I equals 0, et cetera, et cetera. And then we shift each of the characters over. So what we're basically doing is that we're taking the input argv 1, and because we're not going to use argv 1 in any other place, we can just rewrite the characters in that string. Okay? So what we're doing is writing this, the ciphertext in place of the original text. Okay. So how do we do this? We go through the for loop for int I equals 0, we get the length, and then we go smaller than or equal to length, then I plus plus. We shift, and then how do we shift each character? First of all, how do we get the character? Say our input is called input.
Input and then I.
Yeah, so input square brackets I. That would get the current character that we're working on. And then we can shift that using this. This function that we had, pi would be input I plus k, which we got in the previous stage, and then mod that by 26. Okay. Sounds pretty simple, right? And it is pretty simple. Does anyone have any questions?
Could you repeat that one more time?
Okay. So we're going through the for loop, going through each of the characters in our original input text. And our original input text, in this case, we call input. And then we run the function, run this function, ci equals pi plus k mod 26, on that particular character. So input I equals input I equals input I plus k, and k we got in the previous stage, and all modded by 26. Okay, so we're rewriting input in place. We're rewriting each of the characters in input. Okay. Does anyone have any questions about this? Yes. What about case? Okay, so case is very important. In the spec, we cannot actually... so if you shift, say, small... If you shift small a, sorry, small z, and then you wrap around, you're supposed to get small a, not big A or anything else. So in our for loop, so I actually oversimplified. We can't actually just say input I equals input I plus k mod 26, because that would just shift everything over into symbols. So we actually need to verify that the characters that we're working on are actually lowercase or uppercase, or not a character at all, and not an alphabetical character at all. Okay? So I'll leave most of that up to you. But the most important thing to realize is that when we're going through each of the characters, you need to think about what, for example, a small a would do, what a small z would do, what a big A would do, and what a big Z would do. Okay. Does everyone have a vague idea, a general idea of how we might do this, we might implement this in our for loop? Yes?
For everything, and like have like if it's between whatever ASCII values for lowercase a and lowercase d, then do that, and then if it's whatever uppercase a and uppercase c, and then if it's any like not any of those two cases, then leave it alone.
Yeah, exactly. So that's actually a very good approach. So to check to see if a number is lowercase. Since there is no is lowercase function in C, we need to check to see if the current character that we're working on is between, say, small a and small z, to check for lowercase. And that we can do the same as we did for here, small a, small z. So we can check to see if the current character is bigger than or equal to a, or smaller than or equal to z. And that will be our check for lowercase. Okay. Does everyone get why that would work? Because remember, every character in C is an ASCII number. So when we write single quotes A, it's not actually single quotes A, it's actually the number 65. And when we write big A, it's not actually big A, but it's actually the number 97.
So you're saying
you see ArcV? Oh, no, no. ArcV has got nothing to do with this. We're just checking to see if input I is between these two values. Okay? So we could, instead of actually writing the check to see if it's between A and Z in our function, we could also write a special helper function. So you all know what a helper function is? Okay, so a helper function is just a function defined outside of our main function, and anything that helps our main function run. So a helper function might be called say int is lowercase, and then in is lowercase we check is lowercase would take one argument, the character, and then it would check for that and then return the appropriate value, 0, 1, 0 being false and 1 being true. Or we could even use the C data type boolean, but that's also another design decision that you have to make. If you're going to use the is lowercase function multiple times, then you don't want to be writing that that code multiple times in your your program. Does everyone get it? It's not a case of what our program does, but a case of do we want to write this code multiple times, and then maybe we'll have the same bug everywhere. But if we write it in one function, we can just fix that bug in one place, and then our entire program is fixed. Okay, so this is a design decision. It's not going to affect how your program runs. Okay. Is everyone confused? Okay, great. So this is our Caesar cipher. Are there any other gotchas? Is our program going to run properly? We've checked to see if everything is lowercase, uppercase, or not a alphabetical character at all, and then we've done the correct thing in that instance. Is everyone fine with that? Okay. So there might be problems with this code, but by debugging the program, you'll see if it actually runs or not. Okay, but this is the general approach that you should take, going through each of the characters in our input string and then converting them in place to our ciphertext. And then, of course, in the end, once we've got our new input, since it's going to be overwritten, we can printf our new input string. Okay? Good. Okay, so now I'll go to the Visionaire cipher, which is the other cipher that David talked about. So what is the difference here? It's clearly very different, but it's actually pretty similar, because we have the same function C, the same general function C equals P plus K mod 26. The only difference being K is no longer a fixed constant. It's KI. So what the so can anyone explain what the Visionaire cipher does? So first, what inputs do we have to have to implement a Visionaire cipher?
Instead of just a number K,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's instead of just a number K, it's a keyword. And a keyword would be the password, effectively, of our ciphertext. So we have the input, same as Caesar. We have the and then we have the keyword. So we have these two inputs. Okay. So, and then once we've got those inputs, what does Visionaire do? This was covered in lecture. It's the same. I've actually stole the same slide from David. Any ideas what the Visionaire cipher does? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what it does is that it looks at a keyword, K, and then in our case, so one important distinction that we have to make is that A, big A, is 65 in computer speak, but it's 1 in VisionNet CipherSpeak because we're talking about humans here. So F is A, B, C, D, E, F. It's 6. So H, the value of H, whatever that means, if G, H, so 8. 8 plus 6 equals M, because M is the 14th letter in the alphabet. Did I screw that up? Is that... So it doesn't actually really matter No, it does matter. A is 1 in our VisionNet cipher.
So is it really
quick? Oh, okay, sorry. A is 0. Yeah. Thank you. So O plus A is not going to affect anything because A is 0. So our alphabet is 0 indexed, and Z will be 25. Okay? Yes?
Is 0 indexed automatically?
You have to implement it yourself because you're going to be manipulating ASCII values. So it depends on how you implement it. Right. So we'll see later on how we...
But even for like C equals P plus A, mm-hmm. if A is 65, if you mod 26, won't that take you lower than 65?
Yeah, so if we just... the question was, if A is 65, then wouldn't running that function cause the function to wrap prematurely? And yes, it will. So the thing we have to do, as we'll see later, is that we have to convert our alphabet, convert our ASCII values into an alphabet. So, for example, convert A. We'll have to either write a helper function or some block of code that converts big A to 0. So, can anyone see how that would be done? It's really easy. It's just a subtraction. Okay, it's just some character minus 65, because 65 is an offset. Okay. Well, we'll see that later on. Okay. So, how do we implement our VisionNet cipher? I think we can actually start off by copying and pasting our Caesar.c, because Caesar and VisionNet share a distinct similarity in how they work, because it's the same thing. It gets an input, and then it takes each of the characters and then converts that into ciphertext. So how do we implement this? So we run cp Caesar.c VisionNet.c, and then hit enter, and then we've copied the file over, then we've opened VisionNet.c in your favorite text editor. What is the first thing that we have to change? So basically, what is the difference between Caesar and VisionNet?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we can't use this int len. Sorry, not this. We can't convert int. So we can't say int k equals a to I argv1, because argv1 is not an integer in this case. It's a keyword. Okay. So it's actually much easier because. We can treat argv1 as a string, and we don't need to worry about all this number converting business. Okay, so let's say we store the keyword in string keyword equals argv1. We've stored the value of argv1 into a new string called keyword. Okay, so what's next? We've scrubbed that part of the code. We removed all the integer converting business, and then let's say we put in a we're going to have to validate the string in some way, right? What did the spec say about the keywords? What should the keywords be? Any ideas? It's on page 5. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the keyword has to be composed entirely of alphabetical characters. So wait a minute. We can't actually get rid of this code. We have to actually check the string to see not if it's a number between not. So remember our check went through each of the characters and our input. So instead of checking between 0 and 9, we can check to see if each of the characters is between big A and big Z or small A and small Z. Okay. So we still have to do that input validation. And once we've validated that and we got the keywords, then we can start running our own VisionNet cipher loop. So what does the VisionNet cipher do? What is the difference between Caesar and Regener? You've got to help me.
That you're not adding a constant, but a different number for each.
Right. So instead of adding a constant k, we're adding the value of each letter of the keyword. So we're going to have a some kind of counter that tells us where in the keyword we are. Okay. So we're simultaneously going over each of the characters in the input string, but also going over each of the characters in the keyword, because we need a distinct ki for each string, for each character in the input string. Okay, so we need to increment a different variable at the same time as our for loop that goes through each of the characters. Okay, so that's our main for loop. So again, we're going to have the same kind of checks to see if it's a lowercase string, if it's an uppercase character, or if it's not an alphabetical character at all. Because what do we have to do about non-alphabetical characters in the Regener cipher and in the Caesar cipher?
Leave them the same.
Yeah, we just leave it the same. We ignore it. So if the current character is a symbol, if it's not between A to Z in lowercase or uppercase, then we just continue the for loop. Continue means go on to the next iteration of the loop. Okay. So I've waved my hands at the checks that we're going to have to do to see if it's to do the appropriate thing when it's lowercase or uppercase. Does everyone have an idea of how you would go home tonight and start writing this code? Because that's my goal for the walkthroughs. I see some uneasy grins. Is it confusion or is it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the question is, how does foobar repeat between f foobar and foob? So it's basically the string has been repeated twice, foobar and then foob. How has that happened? Well, So in the Caesar cipher, when we went through each of the characters and then we shifted each of them, how do we wrap it? What function did we use? Mod, yeah. So we can actually use the same thing when we wrap around the keyword. So when we increment the keyword counter, does everyone know what I'm talking about when I say the keyword counter? It's the other variable that I'm incrementing in my for loop that goes over each of the input characters. I need to say keyword characters, keyword counter plus one, and then in parentheses mod what?
The
length of the keyword, yes. So keyword counter plus one mod the length of the keyword, and that's how we wrap the keyword. That's a great question. Any more questions? Okay, so I don't want to keep you, and the next class is going to come. So if you have any questions about this, please do use the resources that CS50 provides. Office hours, virtual office hours, the bulletin board is up now, cs50.net/bb. And if you post a question, you're guaranteed to get at least 10 answers within 5 minutes. So it's an excellent resource. And then you can also email me or email the TF if you have any questions, and please do go to section. Okay, thank you very much, and I hope you still come next week. All right, thanks.